Welcome to The Watchman's Cry, where my dad talks about the end time. So grab your Bible and a pen and paper, and get ready for a good Bible study.
Okay, folks, well, here we are. This is part two. Our program went way over time, so we divided it into two parts. So this is going to be part two, continuing from part one. So God bless you and enjoy. This is what you need to be careful about. Patriotism is religion in itself. If it's not held in check, folks, patriotism can be your God and your complete religion. It can be a religion in itself. How so? Well, it has a way of putting blinders on a person. It has a way of muzzling a person, because whenever they hear their leader say something, even if it goes against Scripture and against the principles of God, because their patriotism is so strong, they would rather do what their earthly king tells them to do instead of what God tells them to do. That's interesting, huh, folks? So that's just a side note, but folks, I'm not saying that you can't be proud of the country you're from and love the land, your homeland. I'm not saying that. You can appreciate your roots. It's a very precious thing to appreciate your roots and your homeland, but you need to appreciate it in balance, folks. Now, as far as me, am I saying I'm not patriotic? I guess I can put it this way. I appreciate the freedoms of the Constitution, and I feel patriotic about the Constitution and the liberties that have been offered to us here in America. I'm patriotic about that, but to be patriotic just as a broad brush, that no matter what the leader says, that's what's truth, I can't go that far, folks, because I appreciate my heavenly kingdom more than I do this piece of real estate down here on earth. We cannot give unquestioned allegiance to an earthly king, folks, with evil policies. We need to be very careful about that. You know, I remember right after 9/11, President George Bush made a statement. He said, "You're either with us or you're with the terrorists." Do you folks remember him saying that? You're either with us or you're with the terrorists. And I remember when I heard that, I just thought to myself, that is the most absurd thing I have ever heard. That's blind allegiance right there. No, I'm not with you, Mr. George Bush. God bless you. But I'm not with you in all the things that you're saying that you want to do. I can't go with blind allegiance. And I'm not a terrorist either. I'm neither. I'm a child of God. I'm a pilgrim in this world. My home is in a city that was built by your Creator. So, I'm neither. But a statement like that, folks, how many people heard that and just said, yeah, okay, rah, rah. We got to be real careful, folks. Now, folks, I'm not saying don't be proud, okay? Please don't misunderstand me. Not being proud of your heritage. I'm not saying that. I'm saying you need to be careful and keep it in its rightful place, in a rightful balance. That's what I'm trying to say. Now, patriotism, I've noticed also, and this is unfortunate, folks, patriotism seems to go hand in hand with guns and bullets. Have you noticed that? Patriotism goes along with force. You know, it's interesting, in the book of Daniel, it talks about the son of perdition, the end-time king, the Antichrist, quote-unquote. It says that he will worship the god of forces. So people seem to really gravitate toward that kind of thing, to power and earthly force, intimidation, weapons, bullets. Why am I bringing up patriotism right now, folks? Why? Because in Revelation chapter 13, the Bible is very clear that patriotism is what's going to cause the people to actually be worshiping the end time empire, beast. It's patriotism, folks. Their nationalism. They'll be very proud of how strong it has become during that time. And the earth worshipped the beast. They worshipped. Did they worship God? No. They worshipped the government. So, what is that? That's nationalism. That's patriotism. Folks, we got to be very careful. If we are at the forefront of the Great Tribulation starting soon, there's going to be some changes come, and somehow the package is going to be presented in front of the whole entire world. When the beast empire is ready to be presented, folks, the package is going to sound so alluring and look so presentable and alluring that people will just be enamored with it. They'll be amazed with it. And their love, their allegiance to their country, their patriotism, their blind allegiance, folks, is what will get them to worship the beast and take the mark of the beast. We got to be very careful, folks, about those things. And that will also drive the people that become the tools of the beast to persecute and kill Christians. How sad is that going to be that some of the people rounding up Christians during the tribulation will actually be maybe Christians themselves, or ex-Christians, or backslidden Christians? That's a very sad thing, isn't it, folks? So we got to be careful about that. Now, folks, I want to be very clear. I do love my heritage. I love the United States from the standpoint of I appreciate that this is where I grew up. I appreciate being an earthly citizen of the United States. But the thing that really makes me sad, folks, and I'll be honest, is I've realized that the United States that I grew up in as a child, I'm 45 years old right now, folks. So my toddler and elementary years were in the 60s and the 70s. The country I grew up in back then is not the same country now that I see today. It's not. It's different. And by the way, I'm going to talk about what caused those changes. And I do not believe that those changes are finished. We are just beginning with those changes. We've just actually entered step one of those changes. It's going to be real interesting what happens in our future. All right, now, getting back to the question or statement for someone that might say, our government wouldn't hurt us. Okay, folks, I'm going to present some information to you now, and it's going to be a little disturbing or unbelievable, so just write it down, and then you can check it out for yourself, okay? A few days ago, there was an interesting interview that appeared on the internet, and it was recorded on approximately July the 9th. It's almost a month old, but the interview was by an individual named Cy Hirsch, or Seymour Hirsch is his long name. He's a journalist. He's a writer for the New Yorker magazine. He's very respected in his field because he has done several stories that have exposed some of the secret things that the government has done. In fact, he won the Pulitzer Prize during the Vietnam War because he wrote and exposed the massacre that occurred in Vietnam called the My Lai Massacre. How many of you folks have heard of that? The My Lai Massacre occurred when our forces, our GIs, our boys, were in Vietnam, and they massacred a village of men, women, and children who were unarmed to the tune of 500 people, and they mowed them down with machine guns into three different ditches. Our people did that, folks. We did it. By the way, don't send me emails telling me that this didn't happen, okay? Folks, it's history. It's part of history. Google it if you don't believe me, okay? The United States has stains, folks. Now, Seymour Hirsch wrote about the My Lai Massacre back then, and since then, he's done a lot of other stories. He was a keynote speaker at the Campus Progress Journalism Conference in Washington, D.C. on July the 9th. He was being interviewed. He was up on the stage, and they were asking him questions, so he was just answering. Seymour Hirsch revealed that the Bush administration had a meeting in Vice President Dick Cheney's office recently. And here's where it gets interesting, folks. In that meeting, the cabinet members were discussing with Vice President Cheney, how can a war be triggered with Iran? How can we get Iran to have a war with us? What event can we do to get the people behind us to have a war with Iran? So many ideas were discussed in this meeting, but the one that caught his attention, and this is the one that he actually talked about, was that the idea was brought up, and Dick Cheney listened to it and they discussed it. The idea was brought up to build 4 or 5 boats in America in an American shipyard made to look like Iranian patrol boats, PT boats, and dress them up, paint them up, make them look like Iranian boats. And then the plan was put Navy SEALs in these boats and give them lots of arms and then position them at the mouth of the Strait of Hormuz, which is in the Persian Gulf next to Iran, 20 miles wide, position them there in these fake boats, and then have them attack one of our ships, have a shootout. That was the plan, to have our own Americans attack Americans. Now, when he was listening to this, he's just listening, Mr. Cy Hirsch said that this idea was supposedly rejected because somebody said, well, you can't have Americans attacking Americans. So they rejected the idea. In this meeting, they rejected the idea. So Cy Hirsch left and he said, well, so they decided not to do it. Of course, they decided not to do it in the meeting where he was witnessing. Now, here's the thing that I find interesting, folks. The goal of this plan was to blame the attack on Iran, dress up our soldiers in a false flag attack against ourselves, and then we would be at war with Iran. Now, this was a recent meeting. Folks, how many of you find this absurd or unbelievable? How many of you are listening to this and say, there is no way that Dick Cheney talked about that? That couldn't happen. They would never do that. I don't believe it. Are you saying that right now? Well, let's enter Mr. James Banford into this discussion right now. James Bamford. That's James B-A-M-F-O-R-D. James Bamford. He's a writer. Write his name down because I'm going to tell you about something that he did and discovered, and then you can check it out for yourself. You can see this individual's a real individual, and the story's true, okay? Mr. James Bamford, in 2001, wrote a book called The Body of Secrets. Body of Secrets, folks. Write that one down. Now, this book was about the U.S. intelligence agencies, and Mr. Bamford writes a lot about the intelligence agencies. He writes about the CIA, the FBI, and that's what his genre is, okay? Now, in his research for this book, The Body of Secrets, he wanted to check out some declassified documents from the JFK administration. He submitted a request to look at some documents that were now declassified because the time has lapsed, and he found many documents and he went over them that he felt he wanted to include in his book. Well, when he was researching and looking over some documents, he came across a real interesting document. Now, I'm going to tell you the name of this document, write it down, and then Google it. It's true, folks, what I'm about to tell you, okay? ABC News did a story on it, by the way, also, all right? Now, he came across a document titled Justification for the U.S. Military Intervention in Cuba. That's the name of it. I'll say it again. Justification for U.S. Military Intervention in Cuba. Now, what this document was, it was a classified document. There was actually a memo, and it was given to the Secretary of Defense, Robert McNamara, who was the Defense Secretary back in 1962. This memo was given to him. Now, this memo also had another name that it went by, and it was called Operation Northwoods. Okay, folks, write that one down if you want to Google this, okay? Operation Northwoods was the name of this document. Very, very interesting, folks. This is what it said. It was a plan on how the United States could enter a war with Cuba during Kennedy's administration. There were people in our military at that time that wanted us to enter a war and have a war with Cuba, and there were, of course, were other people that did not want to, but in this document, are you ready, folks? I'm going to tell you what this document said. This is just amazing, but this thing's real, okay? Here's what it said. It said, in order to get us to have a war with Cuba, we need to make a public rally behind the military and rally behind the United States to make us want to attack Cuba. We need to get the public on our side. So here's what we can do to do that. Number one, we could dress our soldiers as Cubans, our own military soldiers, our Marine SEALs, dress them as Cubans and have them attack our bases down there, down in Florida. Attack our bases and also in Guantanamo Bay, having them attack the bases, dress them like Cubans, and attack ourselves. Next, we could start riots near bases with fake provocateurs dressed as Cubans. So we'd dress up some of our own soldiers as the enemy and then have them starting riots. And then we could blow up ammo inside our base and start fires by people dressed up like Cubans. So we're attacking our bases now. We're actually blowing things up. Then, we could sabotage or burn our aircraft, burn some of our planes, sabotage them. We could lob mortar shells into our base. So they're actually doing physical, explosive-type attacks now. And then it says we could attack ships in the harbor. We could sink some ships. We could paint our planes. And then it goes on, folks. It gets more unbelievable as it goes on. We could paint our planes to look like MiG fighters, the Russian MiGs, and then have them attacking the base, flying over and bombing it. And then we could shoot down, now get this one, folks, we could shoot down a civilian plane with students in it and blame it on Cuba. And this one would really work good because the public would really feel hurt that some college students died. So we could do that. So folks, how absurd does that sound? How crazy does that sound? How unbelievable does it sound that our own United States of America, our government had plans for government-sponsored terrorism and false flag attacks on ourselves. It's pretty amazing, folks, but history has shown us for hundreds of years that this has been the exact, very exact plan that leaders have used over and over to get people on their side. This is not a new idea. Look at Hitler. When the Parliament building burnt down, the Reichstag building, that's like our Congress, our Capitol building burning down, Hitler got his people to burn it down, and then he blamed it on the other party. So it allowed him to round up the other party and take care of business with them, and then he became the one-party dictator. It's not a new idea, folks. You know, over the years, I've been doing more and more research, and I have found more stories like this. It's very disturbing that our once what I thought perfect heavenly Christian nation has had a very dark past and dark stains. during the Clinton administration in the 90s. Now, how many of you remember, real quick, we had Daddy Bush the president from 88 through 92. After he lost the election, Bill Clinton took over for 8 years. During the time that Clinton took over, some interesting things happened, folks. And this is something else I want to share, and it might sound unbelievable to you as well. Daddy Bush's administration had a lot of individuals who worked for him, including Dick Cheney, Paul Wolfowitz. Have you heard the names? Donald Rumsfeld. They worked for Daddy Bush. Well, after Clinton became the president, these individuals got together with a lot of other members of the cabinet, and they started a think tank. In 1997, it was a neoconservative think tank, and it was formed and based in Washington, D.C. Now, this think tank, again, it had all these members. Dick Cheney was a member of it, Donald Rumsfeld, Paul Wolfowitz, basically the same bunch that worked for Daddy Bush. Now, the purpose of their think tank was called the Project for a New American Century, or PNAC, those are the initials, or PNAC is another word for it. This think tank group was to plan and maintain and come up with ways how the United States could maintain their dominance as a superpower in the world in the coming new century, the year 2000. So what they did was they got together and they made recommendations and they wrote some articles, they wrote some papers. These plans were how the United States could maintain its superpower status in the world. So they published their plans, and it's on the internet. You can download it. It's called Rebuilding America's Defenses is the name of the plan they came up with. It's fairly long. I believe it's 70, 80, 90 pages long. It's up there. If you download it, you can find it. Just Google it. Google the phrase PNAC, and you'll find it. Or Google Rebuilding America's Defenses. Now, I just want to share with you some of the things that were in this plan, folks. This was written in the 90s. It said that we have to defend the American homeland. By the way, homeland, they were calling for defending the homeland in 1990, folks. It's interesting that homeland security was already planned before 9/11. They were already working on it in the 90s. Part of their plan was to defend the homeland. I'll just give you some of the bullet points of their plans. I won't read the whole thing, but these are some of the bullet points, folks. The United States needs to be able to fight and win simultaneous major theater wars. We have to fight more than one war at the same time. We also have to modernize the entire military and transform all the old weaponry into space age, new age weaponry. Now, folks, interesting now, the military spending for the United States is almost $500 billion a year. $500 billion, folks. Also, another thing that this plan called for was the need to deal with Iraq and Iran by attacking them. It said this in the 90s, folks. We need to attack Iraq and Iran. And it also said we had to put new bases all over the world and in the Middle East and in South America. So this plan in the 90s said that we were going to put bases in the Middle East. Now, when Bill Clinton was the president, we didn't have a lot of bases in the Middle East. Today, we have the world's largest base in Iraq. The largest base in the world, the largest American military base, is found in Iraq now. And at last count, I believe there's 15 of them that are being constructed and built. There was already a plan for putting bases in the Middle East in the 90s, folks. And in South America, that's also part of the plan. So, folks, don't be surprised if in the years ahead we find ourselves in a war with Mr. Chavez in Venezuela and we end up putting a base down there. This is basically a script of what's going to happen in our future. The report went on to say that we can't just be Fortress America living on North America and minding our own business. We can't just be a little fortress. We have to instead go throughout the entire world and have forces throughout the world. And folks, that's exactly what we have. We have over 700 bases throughout the world. Did you know that? In over 100 countries in one form or another. 700 bases, folks. Can you say empire? Anybody? You know, more and more I'm seeing that. The United States is an empire now. We are, folks. No, we're not. We're not an empire. Well, what else would you call it? Now, up to this point, I can hear a lot of patriotic Americans saying, I don't hear anything bad. Sounds good. We need to be strong. And up to this point, I guess I can't argue very strongly against that. But here's where it gets interesting, folks. The article goes on and it says, these plans will take a long time to become reality unless the United States has a new Pearl Harbor event. If we have a new Pearl Harbor event happen, then it will thrust us on the fast track to get all these things done, and then the U.S. can start spending a lot on its military. A new Pearl Harbor event, folks. Did we have one? Have we had a new Pearl Harbor event? Of course we have. 9/11 happened. Then after 9/11, we attacked Iraq, just like this memo said we should, because we said that they had bioweapons, or WMDs, weapons of mass destruction. Mr. Cheney accused Saddam of having bioweapons. But I find it real interesting, folks. Now, I'm not against America or any of this, folks. I'm just being honest. I want to be honest with you and myself. We accused Saddam of having bioweapons, but in this document, it says on page 60 of this document that was written by Mr. Cheney himself, he was part of it. And let me read you what it says on page 60 right here. This is the hypocrisy of the U.S., folks. I'm just going to be honest here. On page 60 of this document, it says, advanced forms of biological warfare that can target specific genotypes. Now, for those of you that don't know, genotypes are a race of people. May transform biowarfare from the realm of terror to a politically useful tool. Now, for those of you that don't understand what I just said, let me break it down. What does this mean? It means that an advanced form of biological weapon that can target races of people, like Asians, like let's say you go into a crowded bus terminal and you open a vial up, you open it up, and the virus escapes, and it only kills the Asians, or it only kills the black people, or the Arabs, or it only kills the Hispanics. It only targets certain genotypes. That means races. It says it would be a politically useful tool. That's what Dick Cheney's document says, folks. This is a demonic, satanic, murderous proposition. Think about that. The USA, the Christian good guys, we now use tools that are barbaric. They can target certain races. That's not really a surprise, by the way, folks. Mr. Cheney, after 9/11, he made a statement, and he said, on record, he's on record of saying this, and you can Google this too, he said that the United States must now go to the dark side for the war on terror. We're going to the dark side. The Death Star, that's us now, folks. We're the evil ones, the evil empire, the one that Darth Vader controls, that's us now. Very interesting how things have changed since 9/11. Now, why does that bother me that this article talked about this bioweapon? Well, this is why it bothers me, folks, because we attacked another nation because we said he had some canisters of sarin gas that was old technology from 20 years ago, and he should not own those things, and that's fine, that's good. The World Court has decided that people can't have sarin gas. However, at the same time, we have a think tank that our vice president is a part of that says new technology and new weapons, advanced forms of bioweapons would be a useful tool for the United States. So while we're telling the rest of the world that they can't do this and have these things, we can have these weapons that can actually target races of people. Folks, think about that. That's evil. Does that bother you? And because we accused Mr. Saddam of having those things, which by the way, it has come out now that he didn't, and the story was manufactured all along. It was a lie from the very beginning. We made it up that he had them. But because of that, folks, because of a lie, we have a war that over 4,000 of our boys have gone and died for, and over 35,000 are injured now today. Without their legs, without their arms, without use of their eyes, that are coming back crippled, quadriplegics. We have people, boys, that are coming back with their lives ruined and changed forever because of this war that's not true. And on top of that, we have 1 million civilians in Iraq that have died. We live on the Death Star here in America now, folks. Sorry to say, but we do. Our government wouldn't hurt us. Folks, I'm bringing all this up because I'm trying to show you that the statement they will deliver you up is not a far-fetched idea to happen in modern Western world, the United States or Canada or the UK. It's not a far-fetched idea. Our leaders are dark, and Satan does control the kingdoms of this world, and he has dark and evil plans. And now we have the debate going on with people on whether torture is torture. You know, 10 years ago, it would have been unheard of to think that Americans torture their prisoners. But now, we have open debates happening on CNN, on Fox TV, on C-SPAN. I've seen them. We've even had a Bush advisor, an attorney for the Bush administration, Mr. John Yoo. And by the way, what I'm about to tell you folks, write this down and Google it if you don't believe me. There was an attorney, a Bush advisor, named John Yoo, who was at a debate, and he was arguing because some of the other leaders in Washington were arguing with him, telling him that the Bush administration should not be condoning torture. And Mr. John Yoo answered with this statement. He said publicly that there's no law that could prevent the president from ordering torture. No law. None. President Bush has the right to torture. He even said this. He said there's no law that can stop President Bush from ordering torture, including torturing the child of a quote-unquote terrorist. We have the right to torture the child. including, get this folks, John, you said this, including crushing the child's testicles. So here we are, the good old USA, the great country that now says it's okay to take children and torture them. The dark side, folks. Then they will deliver you up. It's not far-fetched, folks. Now, before I end, there's something I want to touch. You haven't touched everything already? Brother Nathan, I think you're crazy and you're nuts, and I don't believe anything you've said. That's fine. If you don't believe me, folks, then don't believe me. If you don't want to take the time to research any of these things, if they don't bother you, if these things that show that we have lowered ourselves, that we have lowered our integrity as a nation, God shed his grace on thee, God bless America, oh beautiful, if these things that I just told you don't bother you at all, folks, then I really question where your allegiance is to. Maybe your allegiance is to an unearthly kingdom and not to a heavenly kingdom. All right? But let me finish with this. I'm going to say this. I want to discuss the big tamale right now. The big one, folks. There's one event that has changed the entire world and allowed all the laws that have taken away the freedoms of America, Canadians, UK, Europeans, South Africa, Australia, the Middle East, Japan. They have changed the whole face of freedom in the entire world, folks. The war on terror changed this thing, and it was because of one pivotal event. And of course, you know what I'm talking about. It was 9/11, September 11th, 2001. You know the story. How many of you remember it? How many of you watched it? How many of you have researched it? This one event, folks, 3,000 people died. Because of this one event, everything has changed forever. Because of this one event, because of this day, folks, every Constitution-killing law in the last few years is because of this day. It was the new Pearl Harbor. Just like the PNAC document wanted, we got our new Pearl Harbor event, all right. It happened. I watched it. I was glued to the TV. I watched it, and I remember a lot of the things that I saw. And then I remember the official story coming out. I remember the 9/11 commission that was formed. I remember their hearings that were broadcast on TV, and I remember listening, and I remember, folks, I remember hearing our leaders in the commission hearings lie and make up things that were not true that happened during 9/11. I remember watching them lie. I saw Condoleezza Rice lie to the 9/11 commission. Condi Rice, our Secretary of State. But still, they concluded, and they came out with their official story, and the book was published, and it was a big fat book you can buy, Red, White, and Blue. The 9/11 Commission Report. But there's a problem, folks. There's a problem. The official story that was published in that book has so many holes in it that you could drive a truck through them. The 9/11 official commission story has many, hundreds of unanswered questions. There are many things that do not add up. Some of you might have heard, well, there's some wacko people that say things are messed up, but you've never really checked it out, right? Well, guess what, folks? I did check it out. I checked it out, I did some research, and I was left feeling violated after I did my research. I researched this entire thing. Actually, I researched it for several years, 3 years, 3 to 4 years, in fact, I researched it. Thousands of hours I poured into research. And the thing that I was left with was anger. I was very angry when I was done with my research, and here's why. Because on the day of 9/11, folks, I remember the shock and the dismay and the utter sorrow that I felt. For 2 weeks, it wouldn't come off. I remember walking around a week later. I'd be in the grocery store, and I'm at the checkout, and there's Time Magazine with the buildings burning, and I remember just wanting to tear up and start crying. I remember I grieved, and a lot of you remember it too, right? I saw the pictures of people jumping out of the building. 75 people jumped out that day, folks. They would rather have jumped than burn. 75. I watched that. I watched them fall. And I wept on that day. The grief that I went through that, I didn't understand. It made no sense during that day why it happened. And then when the official story came out and I saw how many lies there were, it made me angry because it told me that this didn't need to happen. It told me that there was a big cover-up, and it actually made me very, very disappointed in my country. It made me disappointed for failing to stop this, and it made me even wonder if there were rogue elements in our country that actually took part in this. What am I saying? What in the world are you talking about? Let me tell you something. Here's what I'm talking about, folks. Let me give you an example of some of the unanswered questions. How many buildings do you remember falling on 9/11? How many collapsed? Most of you would say immediately two buildings, the World Trade Centers, Tower 1 and 2, right? But there was a third building that fell that day. How many of you folks know this? A third building fell. You remember? 8 hours later, in fact, it fell at 5:20 in the afternoon. It wasn't next to the main towers. It was about 2 blocks away. This building that fell at 5:20 in the afternoon, 8 hours later, is called the Solomon Brothers Building, or Building 7. This building was 47 stories tall. It was not hit by a plane, and there were limited fires in this building. If you saw photographs of this building before it collapsed, there was only a fire just on a few floors. That was about it. But here's what's real interesting, folks, and this is what puts a huge hole in the official story, and that is this. Here's the problem, folks. Building 7 collapsed at 5:20 in the afternoon. Problem. BBC News did a live feed transmission from New York City. They stuck a camera in front of a lady, and she starts announcing at 4:55, saying that Building 7 just collapsed. And when she starts talking, we interrupt. Here's another live feed. So-and-so, take us away. What's going on? Well, a third building just collapsed, Building 7. It was the Solomon Brothers Building. And she's talking about this building collapsing, folks. Problem, though. The building doesn't collapse for 25 more minutes. And when she's talking, you can see Building 7 totally intact behind her. It's in the frame. It's right next to her head when she's talking. They reported that the building collapsed 25 minutes too early. Now, how is that possible? Exactly, folks. You might be saying that to yourself. What? The only way that's possible is that they knew it was going to collapse. Exactly. They knew. And then here's what raises another problem. If they knew it was going to collapse, what is going to cause the collapse? How did they bring it down? What brought it down? And that also raises another question. If they knew this building was going to collapse, there's only one way you can do that, folks. There is only one way to bring a building down, a modern skyscraper, and that is through demolition charges that have been placed in the building beforehand. If you Google this whole thing, you Google Building 7, you go to YouTube and you put in Building 7 collapsing, and you look at it yourself, folks. This thing collapses into its own footprint. You can actually watch it collapse, and you can see the penthouse at the very top melt into the roof first, at the very top of the 47 stories. It melts in first. And then the sidewalls collapse into each other. As you look at it in slow motion, you can see each floor being blown out with squibs. You see it. It's on film. You can see charges going off on Building 7, folks. If you start looking down this rabbit hole about this, it'll take you down a rabbit hole that is very disturbing. Very, very, very disturbing, folks. If you are willing to face the truth that something does not smell right here. Something's messed up here. Something fishy went on in 9/11. I don't want to spend a lot of time on it, but you do your own research, folks. This is what I'm trying to say. I'm addressing the very issue of why would our government hurt us, or our government would not hurt us. Folks, that's not true. This government is controlled by Satan. The United States included, Canada included. They're under the powers of darkness, folks. If the tribulation started tomorrow, the United States would be in a dictatorship. Because of 9/11, am I accusing anybody? No, I'm not. I don't know who was involved, but I'll say this. The official story is not true. What we have been told is not true. If you look at the timeline of what our president did on that morning, and you saw what he did after he was informed that we were under attack, you know, he was sitting on a chair in a grade school listening to a little kid read a story about a goat, and then we had Andrew Card walk up to him and whisper in his ear, "Sir, we're under attack," and he nods. The official walks away, and Mr. Bush just sat there and listened to a goat story. He sat there while this all happened, folks. If you see the video of him sitting there, and you look at his face, you can see and you know that his brain is going 100 miles an hour. The gears are turning. He's processing. He is very uncomfortable, but it looks like that was the instruction of what he was told to do. Just sit there, and that's what you see him doing. So I could go on, folks. There have been people that have made videos and done their own research, and you can find them on YouTube or Google Video. If you're interested in that, check it out yourself, but this is my main point. Because of 9/11, the freedoms of most of the world have been erased, and we are just done with Phase 1. 9/11 accomplished Phase 1. What do you mean Phase 1? This is what I'm saying. Phase 2 is coming. Phase 2 is coming, folks. I've done enough research to also know this. The once-held belief that we have a two-party system here in America, the Democrats and Republicans, has exposed itself too many times to me now to reveal to me that the two parties have the same goals and they are one and the same. There's no difference between the two parties. It's like the wrestlers who fight out on the ring, and then in the back room they're drinking coffee together. Folks, how many of you remember during the Bush Sr. campaign when he wanted to get reelected, him and Mr. Clinton seemed to be arch rivals? You remember that? In debates? They were rivals. But actually, how many of you knew that they vacation together? The Clintons and the Bushes. They're buddies. They vacation together, folks. That does not sound like rivals to me. And now, here we go. We have a new election about to happen with Mr. Obama and Mr. McCain. Mr. Obama has said that he's a world citizen. He considers himself to be a world citizen. Mr. McCain has said that he wants to see the hemispheres transform themselves and to finish the work. So basically, the North American Union and the South American Union, he's going to make sure it gets accomplished. He's mentioned terms like the League of Democracies that's coming. Mr. McCain talks about the global New World Order. That's his goal. He's a globalist, and so is Obama. They both want the New World Order, folks. There's no difference. So if you cast your vote for any of them, just pick your poison. They're both poison, in my opinion. And after watching the mess and the lies from both sides, Obama is scary to me. Mr. McCain wants a 100-year war in Iraq, and he wants to attack Iran. You know, folks, I don't want to say this and be offensive, but in a way, I kind of feel like I'm a political atheist right now. I don't believe in any of them, any of the parties. Am I free to do that? Do I have that right? Is that okay? Does that offend you? So, no, I don't trust the Democrats or the Republicans. And since 9/11, I voted in my first election for Ronald Reagan in 1980. I was a happy Republican, a proud Republican, and after 9/11, after I saw the lies that have happened and how Mr. Bush has destroyed the Constitution, I am ashamed to be a Republican. I no longer consider myself a Republican, folks. If that offends some of you, I'm sorry, but I don't. They're both a joke. Both sides of the aisle. I guess maybe that means I'm free to vote in the Constitution Party or the Libertarian. Is that what's left? I guess we'll see, right? But for right now, folks, this is what I want to leave with. Matthew 24, verse 9 says, "Then they shall deliver you up." The plan that has been placed in front of us has got the ball rolling, folks. The end time plan to get the world to be a police state is in motion this very day because of 9/11 and because of a lot of things. But here's what I want to say. 9/11 didn't accomplish all the plan. There's more to come. And the thing that's really disturbing to me is I'm very concerned, folks, that I feel Mr. Obama possibly might be a fulfillment of prophecy, and I don't want to get into that just right now, but the things that I hear him say and the way that I see him treated when he goes to other countries, the rock star status that this guy has, the rock star attraction and the magnetism and the charisma that he seems to have over people. You know, there have been stories that women have actually fainted when they're in his presence. Very interesting. I don't remember women fainting in front of Mr. Clinton, and I thought he was charismatic, but Mr. Obama, I'm very concerned, folks, because I'm wondering if Mr. Obama is the declared one. I'm wondering if he's the one that's going to finish the task and take us to the next level in building the infrastructure to allow police state dictatorship to come into the world. Are things going to happen under him? Is he going to win the presidency and then he's going to pass laws? Or is an event going to happen under him that will actually take away more freedom? Or is an event going to happen under him that will make people not trust Christians? That will make people be enemies of Christians? Will an event happen? Another false flag event I'm talking about, folks. I don't know, but I'm concerned about it. Now, when we were first talking at the beginning of this program, I stated that I've heard some people say, why would the government do that? Well, when you consider Mr. McCain or Obama, it's one or the other, folks. We're going to have one of them as the leader by the end of the year. We're going to know. Instead of asking the question, why would the government do that? We should be asking the question, which one of these two men is going to do that? Which one of these two men is going to bring about change that takes away our freedom? And you know, by the way, folks, interesting word that Mr. Obama keeps using, change. Change is coming. Yeah, to me that doesn't sound good. That sounds a little spooky. What change are you talking about, Mr. Obama? Interesting, folks. Very interesting. This is what I do know. The Bible says, then they will deliver you up. So, in our future, folks, in our future. I want to leave with this real quick. It was about 3 or 4 years ago that Mr. Cheney's company, Halliburton, was given a no-bid contract to a subsidiary of his company called KBR, or Kellogg Brown and Root. Anyway, his company received a no-bid contract worth almost $400 million, and the contract was for building internment camps all around the country. They received this a few years ago, folks. When asked what was the purpose of internment camps around the country, this is what the wording said. They said it was for immigration, or internment camps will be used for disaster relief. And then the third one that's a little bit broad and vague, it said, well, the reason for an internment camp was for rapid development of new programs that are coming. Very interesting, folks. So here we have, in the United States, companies that actually have contracts to build concentration camps, internment camps. This is not made up. I'm not just saying it. It's not made up, folks. It's not conspiracy theory. You can Google it. Google it. Halliburton internment camps contract. Folks, again, research the things I have to say. And you decide for yourself, but I'm just telling you this. We have to be wise, folks, when we're out there. Okay, well, let's go ahead and close. Thank you for listening. I know this was a little bit of a different type of show, but I felt the need that I needed to just let you know about it. You do the research if you have the time. If you want to send me some information or give me your thoughts, go ahead and do that. If you want to write me and tell me that I'm crazy, I guess that's your right to do that. But I've researched this, folks. This is a journey. I'm after the truth. I want the truth, so I don't want to lie, and I'm not going to follow a lie if it's just a fairy tale. So I wouldn't tell you something if it's just a fairy tale, folks. All right? Well, let's end in prayer. Heavenly Father, thank you for our listeners. I ask you, God, to be with every one of them. Be with them, God. Let them be encouraged. Let there be no fear. Let there be no spirit of fear that would attack them. God, just give them your helmet of salvation, the mind of Christ, God, that will cover them so that they will have peace, God. And I thank you. Protect them all, God. And we thank you in Jesus' name. Amen. Well, folks, thanks for listening. God bless you. I hope you enjoyed it. Share this with your friends if you dare. So God bless you, folks, and we'll see you next time.